Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Time Windows by Catherine Rees, narrated by Raquel Beatty. And time yet for 100 indecisions, and for 100 visions and revisions. T.S. Eliot, from The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock. Ever After. Ever after, on muggy, magnolia-scented days, Miranda would stop whatever she was doing and stand silent for a minute or two. She was trying to remember. Something special had happened once. Something wonderful and amazing. Something terrifying, too. Something absolutely impossible. But when she cast her mind back over all the events in her life up till now, she found nothing to account for this sharp certainty. Nothing was special in the way she knew this was. The mystery tantalized her. When memory tickled, she'd stop her bike and stand in the road, tasting the hot summer air. And in her bedroom, she'd stop playing her flute, staring instead at the old dollhouse in the corner by the windows. Strangest of all were the slips in conversation when she was with Dan. They'd be doing homework together or walking to the bus stop, and she'd say, "Remember when?" and then stop, with no idea at all what she had meant to say. Threads of memory, like dreams, tried to weave themselves into a story. But as with dreams, the harder she thought, face bent in a frown of concentration, the strands fluttered like spider gossamer, broke, and were gone. 1. Miranda's parents were singing Sinatra's old song, New York, New York, in the corniest way, trying to harmonize. Miranda tugged on her seatbelt and twisted around to see out the rear window. The moving truck, which had been following their car steadily for the last hour, was now out of sight behind a curve in the highway.
"Slow down, we've lost them," she interrupted.
Her father halted in mid-yodel. "Don't worry, they know the way." Miranda watched until the big truck lumbered into sight again, then leaned forward between the two front seats.
"It's okay now."
Her parents launched into the last verse, raising their voices and grinning at each other. Miranda started laughing. They sounded so awful.
"Come on, Mandy," protested her mother when they'd finished. "You're supposed to be such a lover of music."
"Well, that's just it, Mither. I love music so much I can't bear to listen anymore," she kidded.
Her parents were always doing this in the car, singing their hearts out without a care for staying in tune or knowing the right words. Miranda would make snide remarks, but usually she couldn't help humming along.
"Okay, then, how about if you sing us something?" said her father. "In your perfect pitch, that'll give us a chance to rest up for the grand finale."
"To be sung as we drive into our new driveway," added her mother.
"Okay," agreed Miranda. "Home on the range?"
"Massachusetts doesn't have ranges," said her father. "How about something nice and sentimental, like Home Sweet Home?"
"I don't know the words."
Both her parents screeched into song, her mother thumping the steering wheel to keep time.
"Be it ever so humble, there's no place like home."
Miranda clapped her hands over her ears and pressed her face against the side window, but she was smiling. The move from New York City to Garnet, Massachusetts, had not been Miranda's idea. She sulked when her parents first told her they would leave as soon as school was out for the summer. Miranda's mother, Helen Brown, was a doctor, and she had decided to open a private practice rather than stay on at the large New York hospital.
"This is my chance," she told Miranda. Garnet needs a new doctor, and I've wanted out of here for years. And Miranda's father, Philip Brown, who had taught history at the City College since long before Miranda was born, said the move would be a good change for him, too.
I'm just plain tired of teaching, he said.
But Dad, Miranda protested, who's going to support us? You can't quit.
I quit smoking after 20 years. I can quit teaching after 20 years, too. Anyway, Mither's been earning a lot more than I have for a long time. I'll just take a year off and think about what I want to do next.
Helen laughed. I'll try to support you in the style to which you've become accustomed, Miranda.
Philip glanced around their tiny, crowded apartment.
You'll be doing better than that without even trying. Just getting out of the city is going to make a big difference to me.
So it was settled. For Miranda, the worst part of moving was leaving her best friend, Nicole. But she stopped feeling sad almost as soon as their car left the New York City limits. 13.5 years in New York City, Miranda's whole life had left her with a keen appreciation for wide-open spaces and fresh air. And both of these, Miranda could see as they left the city behind, would not be hard to find in Garnet. She wound down the window and gulped in the fragrant rush of wind. Fresh air had as much to do with her parents' decision to move as her mother's new practice did, Miranda knew. Her father had been sick for the past 2 years, short of breath, overweight, with high blood pressure. He had dizzy spells and coughing fits that seemed to shake the walls of their apartment. But even when his doctor told him what Helen had said for years, that he'd die before he turned 50 if he didn't give up smoking and lose 60 pounds, Philip didn't listen. It wasn't until the day he keeled over while teaching his American history class at the college that he agreed they might be right. He smashed his head on a desk when he fell, and he had to have 18 stitches and stay in bed for a week. The rest gave him plenty of time to think, and when he got up again, he had a new determination.
You two are the most important things in my life, he told Helen and Miranda. I've been stupid. Things are going to change around here.
As always, he was a man of his word. He gave up smoking and joined a weight loss program at the hospital where Helen worked. As Philip began to emerge from ill health, a new man, his complaints about his work increased.
This teaching, he grumbled, is a rat race. Packs of students every term, and are they listening? Does anything ever sink in? The frustration is what drove me to smoke and overeat in the first place, I'm telling you.
Then get out, Phil, said Helen. And so they all were. Getting out.
The road into Garnet wound past cornfields, an old cemetery, whitewashed barns and farmhouses, and so many trees that Miranda felt they were driving into a forest. The town itself was small and full of old-fashioned brick buildings, frame houses, and more trees. Outside the town, the road narrowed and became a lane. And after about a mile, Helen turned the car onto a side road that was paved in brick and wound up a hill. This was their new street, she told Miranda. There were only 4 houses on it, 2 at the bottom of the hill and 2 at the top. Theirs was at the top, across the street from what seemed to be a mansion. Both houses were surrounded by pine woods. Philip awoke with a grunt as the car stopped. He had been dozing since they left the highway.
Well, said Helen, be it ever so humble.
Miranda stared at the house in amazement. It was nothing like what she had imagined when her parents first described their new home. They had driven to Garnet one day while she was in school, spent a few hours with a real estate agent, and returned to the city jubilant at the great deal they'd stumbled upon. Philip had said the house was big.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?